Welcome to the Business and Leadership Channel. My name is Michelle Boulay, and I'm so honored to be a sponsor here at this amazing conference because it's my passion to help you connect to your own inner leader and let that transform the businesses and relationships you create. I'm a life coach and healer and an internationally recognized award-winning dance artist. And dancing taught me to listen to my own inner voice and let that guide me to my success. A very common thing that happens for business owners, creatives, and leaders is that you're so close to your next goal or breakthrough and then you stop. Doubt kicks in, worry, procrastination, fear, overwhelm, which kill growth in your business and creative process. So I'm giving a talk here on Saturday, October 24th, where you'll learn tools so that you can show up with clarity and belief in yourself and your ideas, consistency to keep showing up, and the embodied and intellectual understanding to move you gracefully through the challenges you'll meet as you grow, as you go for your goals. If you can't make it live, pick up your phone now, go to Instagram or Facebook, find me, follow me, and DM me the word success, and I'll send you the free resource I'll be sharing at my presentation. It's also in the show notes. However, I do recommend you attend live here or at my main stage presentation to get the full scope of what I'll be sharing to help you realize your creative dreams. And now, please enjoy this next presentation.
Okay, so Nadine Kreisberger, glad to welcome you to the conference. Nadine works as a therapist and a life coach using various tools from her background in psychology, wisdom tools, to dream work, to her business coaching and leadership training, her understanding of trauma, trauma work and intergenerational work. She works one-to-one in life coaching, as they call joint journeys, and also works in partnerships with other businesses and organizations. So without further ado, Nadine will tell you more about her journey and hope you enjoy the presentation. Thanks, Nadine.
Thank you, Tessa. Thank you for having me. I was thinking about it when preparing for this, that, you know, everybody has heard about the fact that the Chinese character for crisis is made of two characters, danger and opportunity. And without COVID and all the tragedy that comes with it, I think this type of conference would not be happening. And certainly I wouldn't be speaking like this to people around the world. And so I want to I'm feeling that gratitude in the midst of all the pain and all the drama and all the destruction that we're also witnessing. So I'm excited to share a tool I've developed over the years, which I call the Round Table of Inner Characters. It's very practical, it's playful, it can go really deep. And hopefully you're going to enjoy understanding more things about yourself. So basically, it's a tool to understand who we are. It's been thousands of years in human culture and way before that in all human traditions that there's been this injunction to know ourselves. Socrates who said, know thyself. But how do we do that? You know, when we say I, who is the I? Countless traditions, countless philosophies and religions and psychological schools are talking about that. And today I don't want to talk about the I in a spiritual sense, with the divine self or the illusion that the I is and so on and so forth. I want to just talk about the I in a more psychological sense, who I am here on earth in this dimension, functioning in this society. And I want to present this tool based on the idea that we have all sorts of facets. Sometimes we're full of contradictions. Sometimes we do things and we don't understand why. Sometimes we say things and we don't understand why. Sometimes we're attracted to certain people and we don't understand why. Sometimes we make certain choices and then we wake up one day and we're completely off track and we're like, why have I been doing this? So often the answer to all those contradictions or questions is, or those mysteries is, well, those are different facets in you. And some think this and some think that. And some are afraid of this and some are afraid of that. And some part might desire this, but another one is totally afraid of that thing. So I'll tell you just a couple of words about me so that you understand where this is coming from. I work with people mostly one-on-one, and I call it a joint journey. I prefer that word than coaching or therapy because I really feel it's a joint journey. It's two people, an alchemy and a chemistry between two people on the journey of becoming oneself. And my role is to be a conduit to help the person become themselves. In that role, I come with a variety of tools because I have a background. I grew up in France. I lived in New York, in Hawaii, in Mongolia, in India, and now I'm in California. And I've had a number of experiences and initiations and trainings and in many, many different worlds. So in the world of psychology, and that's depth psychology, Jungian psychology, in business, in international affairs, in the media, in journalism. And all of this come, you know, that's the toolbox. Especially when I was in India and I was working with people, I became more and more frustrated with the tools I had. And I felt like I needed something more practical and more useful to help understand what's going on in the person. And because I have a Jungian background, you might have, of course, heard about the term archetypes and his idea that we all have those blueprints, those patterns that you can find in all humans. And of course, you've heard about the idea of the inner child, and there are also different characters that I had been hearing about over the years, but I wanted something more structured and really applicable immediately to the person. I want to bring it to the topic of this channel. This channel is called Leadership and Business. And I've been working with a lot of people in position of leadership. And I was seeing that all those inner contradictions that they could not understand, of course, was impacting also their leadership in all sorts of ways. So over time, I developed this tool and I called it the round table of inner characters. And why? You might have heard about King Arthur and the legend of the round table and his knights. So basically, once upon a time, a very long time ago, there was a wise king called King Arthur. And he had a sort of mentor, teacher, inspirer called Merlin. He was an enchanted being who was half human and half god. Nobody really knew. He was also a trickster. And he created for him a round table with the idea that all the knights at his court were actually equal. They all had different personalities, they had different strengths, they had different weaknesses, but they were equal. And he sat among them randomly. And all those knights had one objective, which was to find the Holy Grail. The Holy Grail means many, many different things to different people. There are many legends around it, but one of them is that to find the Grail is to find the essence of who we are, to find our authenticity and to be aligned with it. And so the idea was that every knight had to go through a path in the forest which had never been walked on to try and find the Grail. And so because the joint journey is based on the idea that we're doing this to help find the core of who we are and to be that in life, I liked this idea. And I liked the idea that all the facets of who we are, whether, and we're gonna go into it, like it's the wise one or the doer or the warrior or the pure inner child or the rebel, the hermit, etc., they're equal. None of them should be a dictator. None of them should rule the table and impose their will on all the others. And that's why I liked that myth. And that's what mythology is about and where it's great when it inspires today in that timeless way, our life. So one little suggestion, you may want to take a little piece of paper to write the names of those different characters as I will describe them. I don't think I will have time to go through all of them, but I might, we'll see. And the idea is we're gonna go through each one of them, and when I say the name, let's say the warrior, what would be great is that just try to see for you, what's the first image that comes to you? Either someone that represents the warrior in life, or a certain way you are when you are really like a warrior. And I'll give you examples of that. But so that's the first thing. Just think, what's the first image that comes to you? And it can be an image, it can be someone you know, it can be someone from mythology, it can be someone from history, whatever comes to you. And then probably not now, because I'm not gonna have time to give you so that you can write those things, but it's really, really beautiful and useful if you can spend some time with each one of them to ask, how are you? How are you doing right now? What is for you a life well lived? You know, what's the ideal life? And where are you now compared to that? You can ask that character, what are your fears? What are your desires? Are you angry about something? Are you depressed right now? You can also ask, sometimes it's useful, how old are you? Because you'll see those different characters, the idealist or the rebel and so on. It's very different ages in us. And the last thing is that this tool, turns out, is extremely useful in relationships. Because very often we fall in love with someone, and then over time there are all sorts of things that come up and we're a little bit puzzled, or there might be tensions and so on. There are different facets that emerge that maybe were not expressed at the beginning and they don't click that much. I have found that if we, in a relationship, we both are much more aware of those different facets and their needs and their realities, it makes the relationship so much easier. And I'll give you some examples as we go through that. But so for each of those characters, if you are in a relationship, it's really interesting to think, for my spouse or my partner, my companion, what's his or her idealist? You know, what's his or her inner critic like? And then you're gonna see where you match and where you don't match. And you're gonna see where there is a big gap, and you're gonna see where there is antagonism. Or you're gonna see, wow, actually, this is a side of me I've never developed, but in him or her, it's really developed. And that's also why I got drawn to that person. It's because my little girl doesn't know how to play, and her little girl knows how to play. And so she was like, yes, let's be with her, because that way we're gonna be able to play. So it's a really powerful way to decipher relationships. And lastly, you can do exactly the same within a leadership team, within a company, within a university, within whatever group you're in. You can look at people and you can be like, which characters are actually running the show in this person? You know, which characters are missing in action? And that will help you understand A, that person much better, and B, how to interact. And hopefully I'll get a chance to give you a few examples. So over the years, the thing about this tool is that it keeps evolving, of course. You know, there's nothing dogmatic about it. But I have found, I've worked with hundreds of people, I've taught this tool in workshops, so by now it's like hundreds and hundreds of people, and I've seen that it holds, so that's nice. There are about 12 characters, which I have found in every human being. Sometimes some of those characters are missing in action, you know, and they're in the basement, so apparently they're not there, but it's just because they weren't activated yet. So, yes, so I will start now with the first one that usually I start with, and it's the wise one. For me, the wise one is like the king or the queen at the table. The wise one is hopefully the one that controls my life. The wise one is the one who has the eagle view. The wise one is the one who can have a perspective on what is a life well lived, and hopefully guide me to that. The wise one is the one that can also say, hey, actually we have no clue what is a life well lived truly for us. But it's going to force us to ask the question so we don't wake up 20 years later regretting everything. And one of the first questions I always ask people I work with, so usually we start with the roundtable of inner characters. And in the first session, I ask them, imagine we meet in many years from now, let's say when you're 99. And I ask you, was it a life well lived? Truly, was it a life well lived? What would it entail for you to be able to tell me genuinely, yes, it was a life well lived? I find it so healthy to ask this question constantly, because that way we can't have really that many regrets. Because at least in the best of my knowledge, right now, that's a life well lived. Of course, in 20 years from now, I'll know other things, but that's not the point. It's right now I've asked the question, and I'm trying to be aligned with that as much as I can according to the circumstances. So the wise one to me is that inner guide. And the one also, of course, that might be on a spiritual quest, that might be connecting to other dimensions of what is the journey of the soul, et cetera, et cetera. So many people, when I ask that, actually Merlin has come up very, very often. He's the image of wisdom for many people with his long white beard, but it might be an amazing grandmother, it might be a shaman you've met, it might be someone in history again, whatever comes to you, or an older version of you, or a version of you now, whatever comes to you. One thing about every character, it's that it might have different manifestations. It might have a manifestation I call, let's say, in the light, which is the best version of it. And it might have a manifestation in the shadow, meaning the shadow is the more destructive aspect of that character. And actually, we might go from one to another in our lives. And a very good example of that is the next character I want to talk about, and it's the doer. So I guess it's self-explanatory. If I say doer, you have a sense of that's the one that goes in the world and does things most of the time professionally. So what's the first image that comes to you? And is the doer in you overactive? Is the doer in you running the show and running your entire life, not leaving much space to other things? Is the doer actually more in its one of its shadow forms, which is like the couch potato, and like I can't get myself to do anything, or I'm too afraid to fail, or you know, whatever will completely sabotage the doer? And I don't know if you know this Oscar Wilde, I think it was Oscar Wilde or Mark Twain, who said, why postpone to tomorrow what you can postpone to the day after tomorrow? You know, so does your doer have a tendency to do that? Is your doer a very controlling doer? One more shadow aspect of the doer I can mention is the overachiever, ready to kill in order to arrive at its goals. You know, it's like the goal justifies the means. Is there any facet of you that can go in that direction in one way or another? Well, that's super interesting to know. So that's the doer. The third one I want to talk about is the warrior. The warrior is the one supposed to give us safety, and we all need that. In ancient times, it was much more present in our lives. Most of us, we don't have warriors around us, or we haven't been a warrior ourselves in a full-blown way, but actually we all have a warrior in us, and we all need a warrior in us, because otherwise we can't feel safe. We can't function in this world, which obviously is a world full of abuse, full of destruction, full of dangers, and so on and so forth. So extremely important character in us. And very often we're not aware of it. And so that can create a lot of anxieties and a lot of fears. We'll get to the inner children in us. So when they don't feel safe and the warrior is somewhere missing in action. So very often I've heard from people when I ask them, what's your idealized version of the warrior? It's the samurai. I've often heard the samurai. So a vision of a warrior that's there exactly when we need, but not more than that, and with a code of a sense of honor and maybe some ethics. So other people told me Athena, you know, in her armor, and she's there and she can defend, but she also has wisdom, so she will only do it when it's needed. Another one I've heard often is the Amazon, of course, for women as a version of the warrior. The warrior in its shadow aspect, unfortunately, we often know, and we might all have it act out sometimes. So it's the wild beast. It's when we're out of control and we start screaming or yelling or being really mean. And very often we don't even know why. It's kind of, we're possessed by that. And if we dig, we always find some kind of insecurity, some kind of wound, some kind of very vulnerable place was touched. And so our reaction was that. If it was that, it's because we've seen that around, that it's the only way that works, or we've seen that in our life, whatever it is. Very often being the wild beast instead of the samurai is very destructive for others and for us. And so perhaps to be looked at. And the other thing about the shadow of the warrior, and that I've seen it so much and so often, it's the survivalist. So the survivalist, I mean, it's connected to the wild beast sometimes, but the survivalist, it's that part in us, it's like almost that amygdala, that reptilian brain scanning for danger all the time. And in many ways, unbeknownst to us, it controls our lives. And so often I've seen it in all sorts of people that you would never think, but actually you dig and then you see it's the survivalist. It's the one thinking, I don't have enough, I might have nothing tomorrow. And so I need to work all the time, and it creates all this anxiety, or I'm all the time on alert, I'm all the time afraid for whatever reason. But so the survivalist most of the time has several layers. One is the layers of my own story, whatever happened to me in my life, whatever happened to me also in my childhood, of course, but also the survivalist very often is connected to transgenerational trauma. And that's one of the tools I bring to my work, and one of the really important things that cannot be overlooked. One of the topics that cannot be emphasized enough is how much baggage we carry because of what happened to our parents and grandparents and so on. And in the last 20 years, there's more and more research on that. There's more and more fascinating work. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Mark Wallin, for instance, but his book, It Didn't Start With You, I recommend it to everyone. So it's really completely determining our behaviors in ways that are unconscious to us. It's controlling our attractions and our fears and our desires. And unless we make it conscious, we're controlled by them, by those things. So especially, one more thing I want to add, when I say transgenerational trauma, it can be the trauma from our family, but it can also be the trauma from our tribe, from, you know, our group. So obviously in this country, we've been experiencing the collective trauma coming from slavery, and it's been coming up a lot, right, in the recent months. When you see groups with a history like the Jewish people, you often see a lot of the transgenerational trauma that's transmitted, and therefore a lot of neurosis, a lot of survivalism. So the survivalist, I would really recommend to everyone. Yes.
Hi, Nadine. Sorry, there's just one question I thought, because it's part of clarifying what you were saying. Sophia was asking, is the survivalist a shadow of a character or a character?
It's a shadow of the warrior. Yeah. It's the one that's all the time anxious about danger. It's the one all the time expecting danger. And a warrior, we need it, but we don't need that anxiety all the time. So it's as if you had a bodyguard, and the bodyguard was in the room and in your bedroom and in your living room and with you all the time, instead of the bodyguard being there when you are outside or whatever, something like that. So that's a shadow of the warrior. The next one I want to talk about is the lover. And that's obvious also to all of you, but what I mean by that. So it would be really interesting for you to see what's the image, what's the character that comes to you that symbolizes that. either the way your lover is now or what your lover ideally would be in your life. And what is his or her status right now? What is or her wishes? What are they? And also, what is life well lived? And this is, for instance, a really good example where if we're not aware of those different characters, we might be on fire with our doer in our life, completely consumed by amazing aspirations and building a startup or going and climbing mountains or whatever it is. But basically the doer is taking all the oxygen and there's no space for the lover. And the doer doesn't care about the lover. By definition, the doer cares about the doer. And that's why I say, unless we have the wise one looking at all of this and making sure there is balance and we listen to the needs of all the characters, that's when we have imbalance in us or in our lives. If we decide very consciously that right now it's a period where this character is gonna run the show, then that's fine. Okay, I'm gonna find a way to have the lover not too frustrated. And for sure, at some point, I will leave some space to that character. But if I just unconsciously put that character in jail, in my inner basement, that creates a lot of inner frustration and a lot of inner anxiety and a lot of angst. And that's when one day we might fall in love like crazy with someone and it doesn't make any sense. And we make some crazy choice and we might self-destruct. But that's because somehow the lover got out of jail in the basement and decided, it's like, it's my time. I don't care. I might die tomorrow. I need it. And that's it. So again, a good example where we want the wise one to be in charge. A shadow aspect of the lover, there are many kinds. One is the controlling one, when our insecurities make us extremely controlling of the other person, that sense of whatever anxiety about rejection or abandonment or whatever that makes us extremely controlling of the other person. Another one is the addiction to being in love, which you might have heard about a lot. And it's, we're on a high, right? When we are at the beginning of the story with someone or the hunt of the person. But then after a year or two, that high is gone. Day-to-day life is taking over and that's boring, or it's an opportunity to go deeper and I might not want to go deeper, so let me escape as fast as I can and find another high and find another lover and so on and so forth. So that's the shadow of the lover, where at the end of the day it doesn't serve us, it can be destructive also, and usually doesn't lead us to the life we lived. Next one I will mention is the inner critic. So who is the inner critic in you? The one systematically telling you what? That it's not good enough, or you're not good enough, or whatever. What are those voices? So this one is really interesting because almost universally I've seen in people that it's not a character, but it's a voice, and it's usually a parent and sometimes a grandparent. So I would say 90% of the time in my experience, it's been a mother or a father, actually. So the role of the inner critic is extremely useful because the inner critic is the one that can scan our reality and scan what we're doing and be like, hey, this is wrong, or this is destructive, or here you're destroying someone else. So it keeps us in check. And for me, I call it ideally, like let's say the head of the CIA or something like that, the one scanning, getting all the information, sitting next to the wise one, and then informing the wise one about what's going on, but not making any decision. The problem with the inner critic is when it goes in its shadow form, and that's when it's totally systematic, destructive, when it prevents us from being who we're meant to be, when it prevents us from engaging in really fulfilling relationships or fulfilling endeavors in our lives, when it's also a very, very acidic, acerbic, cynical judge of others in a way that's very destructive around us, So there's always a reason to that. But if we're not aware of it and we let that cynical or very acidic judge in charge, again, very, very much not conducive to a life well lived. So that's the inner critic. The next one I will mention is the caretaker. So that's the side in us. Again, very different than the others in all sorts of ways and some similarities. The caretaker is the one that takes care of others and hopefully also of ourselves, which we often forget, of our inner child. We're going to talk about the inner child. And I would say the caretaker needs to give a few things. It needs to give to, let's say, to a child or our inner child, safety, love, guidance, and play. Ideally, all those four things, safety, love, guidance, and play. And so it's really interesting to maybe for you to look at it and be like, my caretaker with the people around us or with my inner child, with myself, what kind of caretaker am I? You know, am I there in all those ways? Or maybe more just safety, but not play. Often it doesn't go together. And the shadow of the caretaker is there are a couple of shadows. One is when a parent is too controlling, for instance, and suffocating the child, often because of fear and wanting the child to be safe. But actually at the end of the day, of course, it can be very damaging because it's harder for the child then to blossom in all the ways he or she could. And another one is the opposite. It's no boundaries at all. And it's really interesting because originally I thought the main shadow was the controlling, suffocating. I'm not even talking about abusive parents. I mean, that's so obvious. But even without direct abuse, I was thinking the over-controlling, over-suffocating was the main shadow one. But actually, over time, I've discovered that not giving boundaries is also very difficult for the child for all sorts of reasons. And I don't have time to go into it, but I think it might be quite obvious for you why. So your caretaker. The next one is the hermit. And I like to talk about the hermit because often people don't think about it. And for me, it's a very important character, especially in the world we're in, where we are in such a, we live accelerated times. We live very, very intense lives, very often in contact with a lot of people, even if it's not in person. But the time to be with ourselves, not even with a partner, but really with ourselves, is actually immensely precious. It's actually fundamental to be able to hear clearly those different voices, to be in touch with that wise one, you know? It can happen in a conversation, of course, but it's different when it comes from you with yourself and to let it emerge. There are all sorts of emotions and feelings that can come up when you're on your own, of course, your creativity in all sorts of different ways. And so the hermit is actually a very important character and often overlooked. I've seen in companies when I've done group retreats that everybody actually had a big hermit and was very ashamed to talk about it, because in the company it was all about team spirit and that type of stuff. And then actually it turns out everyone loves their time with themselves and needs it to regenerate themselves. So of course you heard about Carl Jung's distinction between introverts and extroverts, and the idea that introverts are people who really need to be on their own to get energy, and they might be deprived of and drained of energy by being for too long with others. And the extrovert is the one who derives his or her energy from being with others. But of course, nobody is completely an introvert or completely an extrovert. We are all both. And even if we're a complete extrovert, time with ourselves is extremely precious. Whether it's walking in the forest or just looking at the stars or listening to some music and closing our eyes, whatever it is, but time with ourselves and perhaps not doing something, you know, like, but it's fine. I mean, it's like reading a book in front of a fireplace. It's the hermit also. And it's, yeah, very important in our society for sure. One more, it's the idealist. So the idealist is the one, of course, that looks at certain ideas and thinks that he or she should, you know, fight for them, or has an idealistic view of what life should be, my life should be. The idealist is much more prominent in certain people than others, but actually in one way or another, it's present in almost everyone. The idealist is amazing when it's in its light force, because it pushes change, because it transforms things for the better, because the idealist very often has the courage to go against conformism and against conventionalities in order to make society a better place. So we would not be here in a democracy with gay marriage available or civil rights and so on if there hadn't been many, 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 many idealists fighting for it and continuing to, because all those things are always in danger as well. So the idealist, extremely important character in us, but huge shadow aspects too. And what's the shadow of the idealist in all of us? One is dogma. It's if the idealist in us is so bent on a certain theory and never talks to the wise one in us, it can become more and more and more dogmatic. And the thing with idealism, if you look at it in history, is that idealism without wisdom leads to totalitarianism. If you look at the French Revolution and how it finished with bloodbath of the guillotine, if you look at the Russian Revolution of February 1917, and then it ended up with a totalitarian coup and then totalitarianism. And communism didn't start like that, with the idea of having tens of millions of people dying in gulags, et cetera, et cetera. A very interesting example of idealism is right next to me. So I live in the Berkeley Hills, and I've spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley, and I've spent a lot of time with the big founders of all those big companies we keep hearing about. And I always said this one thing, it's like the largest concentration of brilliance, but the lowest density of wisdom. And when you have extremely powerful tools and you have those ideals and you say, I'm going to change the world and make it a better place, but you don't understand human nature. You don't understand that if you launch those products in the world, they will also be used by the shadow of humanity. They will also be used for negative things. And for instance, you look at the people at Twitter, for instance, and I was talking to all sorts of people there, and they were so proud. It was the time of the Arab Spring and all those things. And they were like, wow, look at what we've done. And then a few years later, I was talking to them, and the main user of Twitter, of course, the president of the United States, is not most of the time the person they love the most. And they had to look at it and be like, it's the same platform. It's this thing we've created. It's just that we were too naive I'm talking about the most idealistic of them. We didn't realize that it actually can be used for destructive drives. So the idealist, so important, so beautiful, so gorgeous to be driven by ideals, but so fundamental to have the idealist talk to the wise one. And the wise one will always bring moderation, or will bring the wisdom of the complexity of human nature, the complexity of, we live in a quantum reality. Nothing is linear. There's no black and white. The idealist easily goes into black and white. So the wise one with the idealist, gorgeous. The idealist on his or her own, not great. That leads me to the next character, actually very often going hand in hand with the idealist, and it's the rebel. So the rebel, what's the image you have for a rebel, the first image that comes for you? And by the way, anybody who wants to share in the chat, super interested to know whatever you want to share about those different characters, where they are for you. But basically the rebel is the one who first questions the established order, whether it's in a family or in a society or in a company, and that helps to make it move. So for instance, if as a child, we live in a family that's extremely conventional or very tough, very hard, very conservative, and I feel suffocating in it. Then my rebel might come in and might open the bars of the jail and get me out. And so the rebel gets us out. It's the first instinct, right? Out of conformism or conventionality or a situation that's actually not good. And then the idealist can take over. But the rebel is, it can be a very, very, very positive energy. Because again, it if we are stuck in a situation that doesn't work for us and the rebel comes and gets us out, it helps us to have a life well lived. But the shadow of the rebel is that it can be very destructive. If my life is ruled only by the rebel, then it leads to anarchy. Basically, anarchy is the shadow of the rebel. It leads potentially to destruction for the sake of destruction. It's just rebellion for the sake of rebellion. When it becomes too systematic and it's not informed by wisdom, again, destructive for us, our surroundings, our society, and so on and so forth. So that's very important when, for instance, we are in times of lots of difficulties and then there are protests and so on and so forth. It's like the rebel comes out and it's fantastic and it's so important, but then let's have the wise one come in so we can have true change and true transformation and not just rebellion. The rebel often I've seen in people is a teenager. That's the image they have for the rebel, unless it's Robin Hood, but often it's a teenager. So not necessarily the wise one. So I'm not saying that the rebel should be next to the wise one, because by definition, the rebel doesn't want that oversight all the time, but it would be good if the wise one keeps a distant and loving and caring, but wise look at the rebel. So then we were talking about the rebel as a teenager, and that leads me to the pure soulful child. So that's one of the characters that you've heard the most about, and it's the inner child. I often have seen that actually in people, there's not one, but there are several inner children, and it's too reductive to keep only one image of an inner child. But still, for today at least, you can say, if I say you as a child, what's the first image that comes to you? How old? And then how are you right now? You know, are you hungry? Are you tired? Are you thirsty? Are you happy? Do you want to go and play? So the image of the child in its purest soulful form is a very important one. But then very often what I've seen is that there's another child that comes in, and that might be the one that got traumatized or wounded and is crying in his or her room and so on. And it might be a different age, and we definitely need both. But so what does the child need? It's the opposite, it's the answer to the caretaker. So the child needs safety. That's the most fundamental thing. Without that, what is there? So survival again, so safety. And then love, and then guidance, because the child by definition is not the wise one. And then play as much as possible, the lightness of being. So you're gonna ask me, are there shadows to the child? Is that possible? Well, you can say yes, in the sense that sometimes whatever happens to us in our childhood and whatever coping mechanism we've learned in order to be safe in our childhood, whatever we've learned from our environment, distorts that child in a way that we don't even realize, but it's actually, it can be, for instance, the pleaser. So I learned as a child that in order to have safety, for instance, or to have love, I need to please, or I need to be perfect, right? It's the perfectionist. I need to always be perfect. I need to always be a good girl, because otherwise, you know, I'm in danger. I'm going to be punished. So that overdevelops perfectionism or the pleasing part in me. Another part could be the victim. If I am stuck in whatever happened then, and I haven't managed to reintegrate that part and get that part of me that got traumatized, now safe and healed, then that part might always feel like a victim and might actually run the show in some way or another, or might create all the time situations where I always find myself in that role of the victim. So those are different aspects. Of course, there is the mean child. That's always fascinated me. And this idea that when you hear, you know, in kindergarten, there was this child and he was so mean, or he just enjoyed in a sadistic way to dissect all those animals, but just hurting those animals for the sake of hurting. And that's such a big question, right? Where does it come from? And multifaceted answer probably, and a big mystery also. So there's a last one that I will mention for today, and it's the artist, or the esthete, as we say in French. It's the appreciation for beauty in life, the appreciation for harmony. It's the creative side in us. Of course, sometimes that side is front and center in our life and it's the doer, but I'm talking for people where it's not the case. Actually, it's such a source of nourishment, and it's such a, for many people, it's actually such a fundamental part of their lives to have the appreciation for beauty in whatever way, through music and through art, through nature, through other human beings, that I have decided to have it as a character. And actually, when it's missing in action, very often there is a little bit of a lack of balance. So actually, I will talk about the body as the last character. So this is the embodiment conference. And I have found, so for many of us, especially in the Western world, and so many people in this conference have been talking about this, there is so naturally a disconnect between body and mind. We are, you know, it's been about 400 years that we live in a Cartesian world. And it actually dates back to even before the divorce between mind and body, even though it doesn't make any sense for 2 seconds when you think about it, but it's the way we function. And I have noticed even for myself that the fact that I didn't have the body before at the round table was really a problem. Whereas when I introduced it for myself and for those I work with, it really became extremely useful. So basically I treat the body as a character so that it's one of the people at the table that I ask, how are you just now? And very often, of course, the body is such a powerful source of information about ourselves, about our surroundings, about where we're at. And if we don't take care of it, I mean, I don't need to go in consequences of that. If it takes over and it's the only obsession in our life, then of course it goes to the other extreme. I'm not talking about that. So somewhere, as usual, can the wise one make sure that I take care of the needs of my body, even, let's say, if the doer is in a super intense time, or the lover is completely on fire and doesn't, you know, of course the body goes with the lover, but sometimes not all the needs of the body are being taken care of in that context. And so what is your body saying right now? Very important question. So those are the 12 main characters. And for everyone, I've seen that those are there. They are, as I said, missing in action sometimes, or dictators, or whatever they are, but they are there in one way or another. And many people actually have more characters than that. And it's a very beautiful thing to discover what those characters are. For instance, some people decided to have a handyman at the table because that side in them was so important. Or they decided to have the spiritual seeker as a different person than the wise one, but really the one who goes and explore and explore and explore those different things. And they decided, that's such a fundamental part of my life. I want that character there as well. So whatever it is for you, just bring those people at the table and just listen to them. Mm-hmm. So just ask each and every one of them, what is a life well lived? Because I'm telling you. Yeah.
So Sorry. Yeah, finish up there.
Yeah. So just to say what your lover is going to say as a life well lived, or what your hermit is going to say as a life well lived, what your idealist is going to say as a life well lived, and so on, or your body, it's going to be a very different question, very different answer to that same question. And then hopefully you can get your wise one to create the balance between all those characters. You cannot do it all at once. It's more a question of over time in our life. There are different stages of our lives when certain characters are more prominent than others, but just to have an overall sense of our lives that we are honoring those different facets of ourselves.
Amazing. Okay. Thank you so much. Sorry, I really want to just continue this forever. We still have obviously a few minutes. I'll do a quick sum up of the bits, and then we'll get to any questions people have. Thank you so much for that amazing talk. I just feel so inspired. Yeah, really, it's a tool I want to use, yeah, with like everyone in my life. I feel I want to ask all these questions. So amazing. So first of all, yeah, so thank you so much for your time. Thanks everyone for their participation. If you really enjoyed this talk and you would like to see it again, it's available for 48 hours and you can see it on Facebook. Or if you'd like to purchase the whole conference, Sarah will link the link in the chat of where you can do that. And it's 50% off if you buy it during the conference. Thanks to our channel sponsor, Michelle Boulay, for this leadership and business channel. We wouldn't have been able to do it without her. There are coffee breaks, a portal, if you'd like to chat with other participants, as you can't really chat in a webinar, but in the coffee break portal, you can chat as in your Zoom. And yeah, if you want to connect on Facebook, there's a Facebook group as well. So quickly now, we'll go back to some questions. If anybody has any, stick them in the chat, the Q&A. One of them, you've already referenced it, Sophia had asked during it, what are the questions that we need to ask the characters? And I know you're saying that, so a reminder for that. And also, yes, how often do you recommend doing this exercise?
Great questions. So how often do you do this exercise? Basically, first of all, it's the first time that you discover those characters is the most important, and you can also draw them. I know some people, they made a collage of all the characters or whatever is really fun for you and helps you connect with all of that. And then go back to it whenever you can and whenever you want. What I have found is really amazing is if you have a spouse or a partner in your life and you share it with that person, and then it's so fun to do it separately and then to share it with the other person and then to be like, okay, what's your rebel? What's your warrior? And so on, and to give names to the different characters. And then what I do with my spouse in my life is that we have all those characters and we use it all the time. And it's so helpful. I didn't have a chance to go too much into the couple thing, but so often, let's say my doer is like crazy working, but my spouse would like a kiss. So she can say, well, the name of her lover, the lover who just wants, you know, the doer's attention, the lover's attention for 1 second. Can the doer give that space? And then instead of being like, you don't pay attention to me, you don't give me the space or something like that, it's like, this character feels that right now. Can that character be aware of it? So that basically is like in your day-to-day life, just enjoy it. So that's one thing, and keep adding, you know, if you have more. So that's one thing. Then you ask, what are the questions to ask? So I would suggest, first of all, description. What's that character like for you? You know, who is he? Who is she? You know, how does he function? What triggers him or her? Second thing I would say, do you have a message for me right now? And often that's, wow, that's really, really interesting what comes instinctively. Then what is a life well lived for you? You ask this character. And then you can ask, how old are you? Or how do you feel right now? Or you can see a little bit like, what is your shadow form? Like you can see, you know, what is my warrior in the shadow form? What is my warrior in the light form? So. And if you are in a couple and you want to do it, the questions that I suggest is, which character relates beautifully to which characters over there on the other table, who is angry or frustrated at whom, and you'll discover many things, who is in love or adores or admires whom at that table. And then you will understand which facet of me is actually so drawn to him or her, and you're going to discover things. Which one communicates well with the other and which one doesn't feel the communication is good. And often it's really interesting what comes up. Which one doesn't feel seen by the other, which one doesn't feel heard. And one more is like, which part in me is attracted to whom there, you know? And then you're going to see very often it's the side in me that I had not developed that are really drawn to the very developed sides, facets, and characters of that other person. Then once you share with your partner, then it's really interesting to see how can the two round tables be more harmonious. And you have wise one talking to wise one, and then the different characters can talk to each other. And the funnest is if you give names, because then it's really easy. It's a shortcut.
Amazing, thank you. And we have one more. Tate asked, do you have any suggestions about bringing a character back in line if they are dominating?
Wow, that's a great question. Yes, number one is, why is that character dominating? So to go to the root cause of that, to try and suppress or to try and balance something like that by force never works, ever. It's as if you try to shove that character in the basement in jail. Well, guess what? It's going to create so much frustration and imbalance and anger. And one day that character is going to come out of the basement and create havoc. So no, the question is, number one, why is that character so important? Like, let's say it's the doer who's the dictator. Very often behind that, there is survivalism. I feel that if I'm not like that, I don't exist. I don't have an identity. I'm not going to be able to pay my rent, whatever. Can we look at the cause, you know? Of why. And once you go really, really, really deep in all sorts of ways, transgenerational, from childhood, whatever, you know, whatever is there, usually you can deactivate a lot of the energy that drives this imbalance. And there's so much more to say, but I'm aware of time, you know?
Yeah.
But so I just want to mention that actually, I think Sarah put the websites, my website, and also which is naidaninc.com, or Seeds of Gold Institute, which is the institute I co-founded with my spouse Laura, which is an institute for all our activities, to just the two of us or with others, to help people become themselves on the journey of finding the grail. And so on those two websites there are contact pages, and so you can contact me if you have questions. And also we teach the roundtable of inner characters in workshops. And now we're gonna do it online instead of doing it in person. And so if you're interested, just write on one of those two websites. So I'll put you on our mailing list, and so that I can let you know when we do our next workshop.
Beautiful, okay, amazing. One of Sarah had mentioned about listing them all 12 in a row really quick, and I was just trying to write them down, but if not, I can, if you have a minute, would yes. you mind listing them out so someone can
of course. So the wise one, the doer, the warrior, the caretaker, the inner critic, the lover, the hermit, the artist, the rebel, the idealist, the body, and the pure soulful child. And of course, you might want to add at least one other child if the first image that comes to you, as often is the case, is a much more traumatized or sad child. So it's really useful to have at least two children.
Thank you so much. Beautiful. Yeah. So we are right up to time. So amazing. And thank you for asking all the questions with such detail. They're really thoughtful. So I appreciate that as well. So thank you everyone for joining. the session will be ending now, so you can leave. As you said, feel free to chat and all the other links, and hope you enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you so much, Nadine.
Thank you so much to everyone for having joined. Thank you to you, Tessa, Sarah, everybody, the whole team. You're amazing. And have fun. Just have fun exploring who you are. It's the most amazing, exhilarating journey you'll ever be on.